It's hour number two of the Bible study. Pastor Kevin Parviz on the way out. Pastor Parviz, Pastor Moore says, sounds like you guys are having fun up there. Yeah, I will. Pastor Moore, Pastor Parviz says hello.
Well, hello right back.
What made you think we were having so much fun up here?
I think I heard Diane Summers giggling.
Yeah, she does that from time to time.
I know she does.
That's Pastor Don Moore. He is pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida. And basking down there in that Florida sunshine, Florida summer, it's got to be wonderful. It's not hot down there, is it?
Yeah.
Is it hot?
Yeah, it is.
You know, we've had like the coolest summer in my memory up here in St. Louis. You get all the heat that we didn't get?
Apparently. We're getting a bunch of it.
Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you have a question or a comment. What we do here in the Ask the Pastor Hour is open the phones up to our listeners. And we find that most listeners are content to listen to the conversation that we have here. But if you got something that's on your mind, if you got a question that you'd like to get an answer for, you just call us up. Come on the air here. You don't have to give your name. If you want to be anonymous, you can do that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
I don't get to be anonymous?
No, we all get to know who you are.
Okay, all right.
Christianity Today has an article, and the title of the article is The Case for Early Marriage. The subtitle says, amid our purity pledges and attempts to make chastity hip, we forgot to teach young Christians how to tie the knot. Now, this is a fairly lengthy article. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read just a little bit here to sort of set the table. And the author is Mark Regnerus. He says, virginity pledges, chastity balls, courtship, side hugs, guarding your heart. Evangelical discourse on sex is more conservative than I've ever seen it. Parents and pastors and youth group leaders told us not to do it before we got married. Why? Because the Bible says so. Yet that simple message didn't go very far in shaping our sexual decision-making. So they kicked it up a notch and staked a battle over virginity, with pledges of abstinence and accountability structures to maintain the power of the imperative to not do what many of us felt like doing. Some of us failed, but we could become, quote, born-again virgins, unquote. Virginity mattered, but sex can be had in other ways, and many of us got creative. Then they told us, well, it goes on and on. The point that the author makes is, get married. If you are feeling the draw or the drive of your human sexuality, get married. And if that means getting married early, then get married early. But there is apparently no message anywhere coming from anybody, church or otherwise, advancing early Christian marriage. The argument is that the culture is saying to young people, don't get married because you need your 20s to sort of find out who you are, to do the things you want to do. You know, we're all very self-exalting in this American culture, and marriage is so restrictive. It is, you know, it takes away so much of your freedom. You have to consider somebody else all the time. So use your 20s to explore all that. And then later on, your late 20s or early 30s, then you can get married and move on to that phase. So, of course, that means we're set up for a decade of, you know, for some folks, promiscuity and difficulty. What do you think about the idea of early marriage, Pastor Moore?
Well, you know, I'd never thought about that connection before, about people not getting married because they're trying to develop themselves, and then there's that drive that goes on in the meantime that causes promiscuity. Never even occurred to me that that could be. So that's kind of
I found it to be a fascinating perspective. It totally sneaked up on me. I had never given this any thought. I was talking to a friend of mine here just in the last week. He got married at age 19. Got a couple of kids now. And so he's gone against the grain, if you will.
Yeah.
And when he said, you know, well, we got married young. I think maybe his wife was 18, he was 19. And when he said it, there was something inside of me that sort of said, whoa, that was a mistake, or, you know, that boy, you really took a risk there, because there are so many divorces. You ask yourself, is somebody really ready at age 19 to take on a commitment like that? And I'm thinking, no, you're not. But the guy is a great husband. He's a great dad. His kids are fine young people. And so I guess it can be done.
Yeah, apparently it can. Well, I know it can. People have been doing it for a long time. But it makes real good sense that, you know, once you get past that adolescence thing, well, even before you get past that adolescence thing, those hormones are driving. You get past adolescence and you have some better, I don't know what you call it, the over mind to manage that. But it doesn't turn off the drive. And the longer you wait, the longer it's going to burn, as Paul puts it. And I would have to suppose that could get you into trouble, and that makes really good sense. Now,
can you elaborate on that burn, as Paul puts it, remark?
Well, when he talks about marriage in 1 Corinthians in particular, he tells people that it's good if you can manage not to be married, because then you can serve the Lord wholeheartedly and without the distractions of serving family. And, you know, that's naturally true. On the other hand, he says, if you can't control the burn, you know, if it's going to cause you to burn with sexual passion, to abstain like that, then get married, which is kind of what this guy is saying. And what that does is it puts the sexual drive in proper perspective with a married partner, and has the blessing of God in that way, and that is also a good way to live. Makes pretty good sense. Now, on the other hand, you know, we understand, I guess, highly civilized and smart people that we are these days, that when you're 18 and 19, it's pretty hard to take care of your family because your education is not extended, your training is not extended, your intelligence, or not your intelligence, but your experience is not extended, and so you may have some trouble with family raising in that environment. But on the other hand, you know, the evidence is the longer we put that off, the higher the divorce rate. So I don't know. I'd say it's probably worth a discovery process somewhere in there.
Well, if you had a 19-year-old young man and an 18-year-old girl in your office, and they came because they read Christianity Today and they decided, you know, either what we're doing is inappropriate or what we wish we were doing is inappropriate, so let's get married.
Yeah.
Is Pastor Moore going to celebrate that and say, well, yeah, let's get that taken care of, then all will be well, or is it going to be more complicated than that?
Well, you still got to have the conversation about reality, you know, because it is a hard world to live in, and there are other kinds of sin besides sexual ones, and you know, communication ability matters, so you have some discussion about that. Your religious concerns matter, and so you discuss that. Your ability to be financially stable matters, so you discuss that. What are you going to do about children? Those things, I wouldn't say don't get married over them, unless I thought there was something wildly wrong there, but I probably would insist on talking about those things so that at least they go into it with open eyes and have the opportunity to have those problems presented to them because, as I said, you're inexperienced at that age. But I wouldn't say don't do it. I would wish them the best and marry them.
The skeptic might say, no, this is a bad move. This is a bad move, because here's what's going to happen. Oh, sure, there are exceptions, but here's the rule. these young people are burning, to use Paul's term, and they think they're in love. But when the burn cools off, what they will discover is there is no real love there at all. And all you're doing, Pastor, is setting them up for a divorce.
Well, it is part of the discussion to talk about the reality, like I said. And the reality is being married is not necessarily going to have that huge emotional draw all the time. But in fact, anybody that's ever been married to anybody knows that that furious hormonal lust isn't there constantly. And to some extent, the older you get, you kind of, hopefully that'll go away. But, or at least settle down. The emotional part isn't the part that is, keeps things going. It's the thing that draws you together. But, I would wonder about, you know, when you're young like that, the dependence on one another has got to be much stronger, because neither one of you is really well supplied to live in the world. And I think that would probably be a useful thing. I don't know. You don't want people to think when they're going into a marriage that emotional love is going to be the thing that matters the most, because it just isn't. It's important.
What?
To have feelings. But they do have flighty moments. Well, you know, you ever been mad at your wife?
Sure.
Well, is that love? Does that feel like love?
No.
No. So what do you do about it? Get a divorce?
No.
No. So what do you do?
You let the emotions work out and run their course and return to the real thing.
Yeah, you turn to the real thing. There's a vow, a promise, the kind of love that actually endures, also in 1 Corinthians, the kind that doesn't get mad and run away, but the kind that really loves is the kind that does something with love. That's why you can actually love your enemy, because it doesn't matter how you feel so much as what you do. And the what you do part is the part that loves. That's the real love that God talks about, the one that matters in a marriage, too. And that endures over the humps that are money problems and children that you can't seem to raise without screaming at each other. And, what do you do with your socks? Do you throw them on the floor or put them where they belong? All that stuff is annoying. And it happens every day in marriage that there's going to be some tension. And you have to get over that stuff, and the emotional love isn't enough. It's not.
505-780-1800-730-2727. Let's talk with Ida. Good morning. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I was lacking 10 days of being 17, and my husband was 17 when we got married, and we will be married 54 years in September.
Ida, what's your secret?
Well, you've got to work at it. I mean, you can't just walk away and say, I'm going to divorce him when I'm really down and out or something, or having a fight. You got to work at getting along together. We've been through the death of two of our children. We had four. We've lost two of them, and we made it through that. We've been through a lot of ups and downs, but you just got to take and work at it.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Pastor?
I think she just agreed with me. I'm
pretty sure she did.
Yeah. It's hard work being in a relationship with someone. And a marriage after a long period of time, it's self-sustaining or something. I'm not sure how that happens, but you develop into how to live with that person and how to love them by your actions. And for some reason, when you do that, it goes around back the other way and causes the emotional love to be problem or in a proper perspective, so that it serves the purpose of the thing and doesn't wreck it when it doesn't happen to be there at the moment. You recognize that you love even when you don't feel like it, and that really is the thing that sustains a marriage.
Picture your typical 18, 19-year-old boy or girl. And they're contemplating marriage. You know, as a pastor, that for that marriage to succeed, whether they're 18 and 19 or 28 and 29 or 48 and 49, it's pretty important to have faith in the mix there.
Yeah.
Are 18 and 19-year-olds capable of contemplating that equation, that mixture? I mean, you know, they just, a couple of years ago, just were in the youth group.
Yeah. Well, confirmation doesn't quite get it, I don't think. But on the other hand, I know that they can get it because I've seen people get it that are younger than that. They really do understand what love is and how to live in it. And applying it to a marriage is not a great step if you already know how to do that. I'd say it's a little harder than most arrangements, but it's still it's not an unusual one if you already know how to love in the way Christ loves. Your religious notions matter in your marriage. If you are, I don't know, the image that I try to picture for people, you know that there's that passage in Hebrews that says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of your faith. That one's really important. And what happens is, if you take a farmer out in the field and he's plowing a row, he looks at something pretty far out in the distance and he drives straight at it and he gets a straight row. Well, if two people are doing that, they're going to end up together and approaching closer and closer to one another. So if you have two people in a marriage and they're both fixing their eyes on Jesus and moving in that direction, they're going to get closer and closer and closer. But if you got one going in one direction and one going in another direction on that very issue, you're going to be pulling apart. And it's going to be tough. Very hard to overcome that. Even denominationally, it's very difficult to go from one to the other without thinking it through first. But people do occasionally.
Let's take another call here, 505-780-5180-730-2727. Pastor Nabil Noor on the line here. Hi, Pastor.
Good morning, Brother Chuck and Saint Moore.
Thanks.
Yeah, just a comment, you know. In my country, in Israel, it's a common practice that about 15, 16, and 17, they begin to look for a wife. And why marriages work...
Pastor Nabil, who begins to look for a wife?
Father.
The father.
Of course. For, I mean, nowadays...
I thought you were talking about the Israeli dating scene there.
No. Well, I mean, but back in the old country... Every young lady, you ask her what she wants, and she will say, I want a husband, and I want to have a home. In the United States, you ask that question, they want education, a car, and, you know, something to do. Back home, they want to be mothers. But my point is this. In the old country, you live in an extended family. You have a young man and a young lady, 18, 17, 16, sometimes even 15, which is, I think, is way too young. But you have the grandmother, the grandfather, who will work through some of the elements of turbulence that comes on a marriage, and they would say to the young man or to the young lady, or even the uncles or the cousins might encourage and exhort them. In the West, when a young couple get married, they are not living very close to each other. And then you have the stigma, oh, I'm not going to ask my father-in-law for advice. You've heard that before. I'm not going to go and talk to my in-laws. There's, well, you've heard them even called the outlaws, which is derogatory. My point is, these words that are spoken for, you know, getting married and stuff at a young age are spoken in a time and a season when families were so close together and continue to be. And I'm not against saying that the Word of God is no longer clear in the sense of getting married at a young age, but you need to instruct the young couple a little bit more in pre-marriage counseling because you don't have the experience and the seasoning of living through turbulence and troubles and temptations that come upon a marriage.
I think you're very right there. Yeah, that's right. There's a great advantage in having your whole life spent in the marriage environment and having that encouragement constantly. It's very much like having a family who does a daily devotion and spends time on catechism. If you get to be in catechism class and you are all your life listening to the catechism, you don't have to spend your whole life memorizing the thing because it's already in your head and internalized. And I think marriage sounds like it's the same thing for you.
Absolutely. You know, I remember growing up in the old country, and my father, if my brother-in-law was doing something, my father would say to him in kind words in front of everybody so that everybody heard. It's not demeaning, but just because there's such a respect for each other. When my dad spoke to my brother-in-law, he would say, what you are doing for your wife or for your child is not a very good thing. And he said, here's what you should do. Now, my brother-in-law could have gotten angry, and he may have. I don't know. But at least there was wisdom that was handed down. And that is something that is lacking in today. And television does not aid but hinders the marriage, because if you have a problem, go to your best friend and talk to them. And that best friend happened to be from the opposite sex. And before too long, you're already asking for trouble.
Pastor Noor, thank you very much for your insight. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Any other comments, Pastor Noor? I got Pastor Noor and Pastor Noor here.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. I've been in problem with Pastor Noor and Vicar Noor, too. That wasn't any better.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
Yeah, well, no.
You know, the old country is gone. That's what
isn't,
I'm thinking.
It's still there. We just don't live there.
Can you get back to there?
I don't know.
Or can you go forward to there?
Yeah, we're so civilized. I'm not sure we know how to go there. I mean, you know, and it's not true everywhere. There are still... I remember living in a small town environment, and it's like that to some extent. If people aren't so mobile, and they're close to their farms and their developments and their families, you know, I miss that so much, actually. But it's just it's not unavailable. It's just not common in our country right now, and it's too bad, really.
When we come back from our break here, which is coming up here in a minute or so, I want to talk to you about a story that's coming from, guess where, Orlando, Florida. Maybe you've heard about this.
I've heard of them.
It involves an Ohio teenager who ran away to your state fearing for her life. Why? Because she converted from Islam to Christianity. She has been ordered into state custody. An Orlando judge yesterday ordered the 17-year-old into the custody of the Department of Children and Families until another hearing next week. The teenager is not a U.S. citizen. She fears her family would hurt her, kill her, or send her back to her native Sri Lanka. Her parents live in Franklin County, Ohio. The teenager took a bus from Ohio to Orlando. She has been staying with a family she met through a Christian prayer group on Facebook. My question for you on the other side of the break here, you will probably never encounter this young girl, probably not be involved in this, but you could have been. She went to Orlando. She could have showed up on the steps of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida, and all of a sudden you as a pastor might have been involved. If it doesn't happen this time, it might happen next year. Let's see what Pastor Moore has to say about this situation on the other side of the break. You're listening to our Ask the Pastor Bible Study, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back. AM 850 KFUO, faithfully proclaiming the gospel for 85 years.
God's message is proclaimed from the minute you go on the air till the minute you shut down in the evening. The saving gospel of Jesus Christ and taking it to the world is the mission of this station. And as they bring the ministry of Christ into the world, you know, each one of us is reminded that there's not a single battle that we face alone as a part of this family. KFUO unites Christians across the world, and I just think that is so important as we look back, you know, in time. For 85 years, this ministry has carried that light to the world, and I just want to thank you and the rest of the hosts for uniting us as a faith family.
A sunfish has about as much personality as an octopus. Learn about it next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
shy or bold? Actually, if we are honest with ourselves, we must admit that we all have areas where we are bold and other areas where we are shy. A person can be bold in willing to fly in any aircraft and at the same time terrified when crossing a bridge. Now scientists have surprised themselves by discovering that the same is true of sunfish, crabs, and the octopus. Evolutionary scientists have always assumed that since the survival of the fittest is the driving force behind evolution, evolution would favor boldness. But scientists found that when they introduced a novel object, say a stick with a red tip, into a school of sunfish, about a quarter of the fish fled from it, while another quarter of the school boldly nipped at the stick. But those fish who were shy towards the stick were no more likely than any other individual in the school to be shy when introduced to unfamiliar food. Those who nipped at the stick didn't prove any more likely to be bold when introduced to the unfamiliar food. Other researchers have concluded that studies show the same behavior in crabs and in the octopus. The researchers marveled that even so-called simple animals showed individually unique traits, just as humans do. As one said, there must be something very special here. There is something very special here. That those creatures have individual personalities says nothing about evolution, but it does remind us that all living things have but one divine creator.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Here's an AMA 50K, if you will, salute to our day sponsors on this Tuesday, August 11th, 2009, Norbert and Ruby Leifer. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AMA 50K, if you will, in honor of children Ronnie and Patty Leifer on the occasion of their 30th anniversary. Once again, a very special thank you to Norbert and Ruby Leifer of Redbud, Illinois, today's AMA 50K, if you will, day sponsors. And happy anniversary to Ronnie and Patty.
You may find a hidden treasure at the 31st Annual YMCA Book Fair. This huge event is one of the largest in the Midwest, benefiting YMCA literacy and youth programs. It's held at the Kennedy Recreation Center across from Susan Park near Highway 21 and Wells Road, and this year it runs August 21st through the 26th. If you need information online, you can visit ymcabookfair.org. The 31st Annual YMCA Book Fair.
Welcome back to our Ask the Pastor Hour here on the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Don Moore is with us from St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida. You know, we work pretty hard to keep church and state separated in our country, but sometimes they just run headlong into each other, and the result is quite a mess. We were talking about a story that we raised right before we went to the break, which is coming out of Orlando, Florida, which is very close to Apopka. It's Pastor Moore's stomping grounds, if you will. It's very complicated. We have a teenager, 17 years old, so she's a minor. She lives in Ohio. She's not a United States citizen. She, I guess, is going through life as a young girl in Islam, and she converts to Christianity. And because of her conversion, she fears, according to the story, I don't know if this is valid or not, but the story reports that she fears that her family might either hurt her, kill her, or send her back to Sri Lanka. And so she goes on the run, and now she's down in your neighborhood, Pastor. Yeah. If you were in a position to influence this problem, what would you do?
Well, I think I would encourage her connection to Jesus, most of all, because there's comfort and peace there in the midst of the storm, which she is clearly in the middle of. She certainly has cause for alarm if her family has this kind of thought. I mean, it's not unheard of, even in this country. Down here a few years ago, a young lady was burned to death by her brother because she was dating the wrong person. And then there was that business back in
Buffalo.
What happened?
Anything happened to the brother?
Well, sure. He was arrested and tried. I don't know what the outcome was. I don't remember that. But I got to figure a murder like that's going to get him some trouble. then they had the business back in Buffalo. It was in February this year where the TV man beheaded his wife in his office. They were Muslim, and she was involved in the National Organization of Women in New York, and he was having trouble in that marriage, and that went wrong. So there's plenty of precedent for the problem. And it's not like there's nobody from Sri Lanka around here. I know a lady with her daughters who married a Lutheran guy up the street here, and she's going through that process of instruction right now to be a Lutheran. So I know that stuff is here. I don't know what her circumstances are, whether her fears are valid. She probably knows better than we do, but it obviously needs to be investigated. I imagine that's what the agency is doing, that's looking after her.
The fourth commandment is honor your mother and your father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you... I realize that the chances are slim to none that this would ever work out this way, but if it turned out that she had come to you, she looked for asylum from you, protect me from my family.
Yeah.
I believe in Jesus. Is there any possibility that Pastor Moore would say, well, if you believe in Jesus, then you need to honor the fourth commandment. You need to go back to your mother and father. Would you do that?
Well, I might say the honor your mother and father part, but I don't think I'd say go back. Not least until it was known what the circumstances were. Then I might say that. Honoring your mother and father don't necessarily mean submitting to murder. I suppose it could mean that in some sense that I don't understand right now. But
well, you know how 17-year-olds are. We just decided they're old enough to marry. But you know how 17-year-olds can be. They could inflate the story a little bit. They could demonize their parents just because, you know, mom and dad won't let them wear the clothes they want to wear because of their Islamic faith or whatever. And maybe she hasn't been entirely fair to her parents.
It's possible. That's, like I say, it'd be something to look into. It needs to be investigated because the potential for the truth of her words is certainly there, and you don't just send somebody back into a burning building and say it isn't on fire. You got to at least find out. And I would participate any way I could with law enforcement appropriately.
You know that little letter of Paul to Philemon? Philemon owned a slave, and the slave, Onesimus, took off.
Yeah.
And Paul says, I'm going to send Onesimus back to you, Philemon, and I know you'll do the right thing.
Right.
Maybe Pastor Moore should say to this teenage girl, now, I'm going to send you back to your parents. And now, you parents, now don't do any of that Islamic beheading stuff or burning people to death. You know, don't let that happen. We're trusting you now. Is Philemon an example for us in this case?
Well, one thing you got to know about Philemon is he was a Christian guy, and he was attached to Paul in some pretty specific ways. So when Paul said that he knew he would do what was right, I think Paul would have some sense of that in a greater sense than I would have with these folks. Because first of all, are understanding properly that they are Muslim?
Yeah, well, the parents are, yeah.
Yeah, the parents, that's what I mean, yeah. They have no... they see no authority in me, and they see no authority in the word of the Lord, and that would be a different conversation, I would have to say.
Let's take a phone call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Marilyn, you're on the Bible study.
Yes, good morning. I'm sure you probably remember, probably 10 years ago, this Islamic girl was indeed murdered by her parents, and she was begging her mother. This was in St. Louis. She was begging her mother to save her from her daddy's wrath. And her sisters were present at the time also. And their problem was that she was becoming too Americanized in our school system. And I know that the parents were convicted, and it seems to me like one was executed. I'm not quite certain on that, but I think that that's what happened. The other one died in prison. Do you remember it all, Chuck?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay.
I don't
well, I'll let you go. I really enjoy your Bible well, study.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And she raises, you know, the issue here, Pastor, is that, I mean, do you have a Roman Catholic church there in your vicinity?
Sure.
You have a Baptist church in your
yep.
vicinity?
We've got all kinds here.
Okay. Well, you know, if you were to sit down with the priest from the Roman Catholic Church, I'm sure that the theological divides between you and the Roman Catholic priest or the Southern Baptist preacher are well defined, and you probably, if you got into a theological discussion, would differ on some things over which you wouldn't be able to resolve it. I mean, you know, it's been 500 years since the Reformation, and those things remain in place.
Yeah.
But I'm 100% sure you would never say to yourself, well, I tell you what, I can't agree with this priest, and I'm just going to have to burn him up in his house.
Right.
Now, when we hear things like Marilyn describes, or the Buffalo incident that you described, or this story that we have today that's coming out of Orlando, Florida, should we view the imam? Do you have an imam down there somewhere close to Apopka?
Oh, sure. We got them, too.
Okay. Should we view the imam sort of the way we view the Roman Catholic priest or the Southern Baptist preacher or the Presbyterian pastor? Should we view him like that? Or should we be saying this is a larger and much more problematic relationship, situation?
Well, it's different because they're not Christian. I mean, a Baptist guy or a Catholic guy, they're Christian guys.
Well, if you were talking to the Latter-day Saints guy, you probably wouldn't feel compelled to, you know, anybody ought to be beheaded or burned.
No, but I wouldn't do that with an imam either, but I would have to understand that the summary difference is quite a bit larger. A Mormon may not be a Christian, but they usually think they are, and to some extent they're a good bit closer to me than a Muslim.
That's the question. That's the issue, proximity.
Yeah.
While there are differing theological views in Western Christianity, there is proximity. How far is Islam from that proximity? Is it just another planet? Or is there some overlap, some common ground that can be explored and perhaps worked in the direction at least of peaceful coexistence? Because these kinds of things are alarmingly not peaceful.
Right, right. Yeah, well, there is common ground. The morality is difficult, but similar. There is some understanding of divine things, although we don't agree on a lot of it. But you can have that discussion about God and existence of God, and you're not dealing with an atheist person there. And the other thing is, in each one of us as human beings, there is that corrupted image of God. And you know, when I have conversations with people that wonder about Muslims and their violence, such as it is in some cases, most of them are, even if their religion compels them to think that way, a lot of them do not. And they want to live in peace because it's preferable, because it's civilized, because the environment is more conducive to peace. And so most of them don't think in that violent way. There are some that do. And I would suppose even if I spoke to an imam here or an imam in Jersey City or in Buffalo or in Chicago, I might get a different attitude than I might get, you know, in another place. And that's also true of the Baptist guy or the Presbyterian guy. So, you know, there are variables here, but I think, you know, 99 out of 100, I'm going to have a lot more in common with a Baptist than I am with the imam as far as the religious matters go. But it's not devoid of conversation, and in fact we must have that conversation because of our are the institution that says go. And that instruction to disciple everybody is going to include the Muslim.
Here's page 3. Santa Rosa County, Florida. Do you know where Santa Rosa County is?
Not specifically.
Not specifically? Doesn't ring a bell?
Well, it rings a bell, but I don't know where it is exactly.
It's coming out of your state. And the story says, Pace High School Principal Frank Lay and Athletic Director Robert Freeman are both facing criminal contempt charges for a prayer offered at a fieldhouse luncheon. I underline the word criminal. The luncheon included former Booster Club members and other adults who helped the Fieldhouse Project. Last year, the ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Santa Rosa County School District, claiming that some of the teachers and administration, quote, endorsed, unquote, religion. Rather than fight, the school district consented to the entry of an order that prohibited, among other things, all prayer at school-sponsored events. The school district then consented to a much broader order fashioned by the ACLU, which essentially bans all employees from engaging in prayer or religious activities, whether before, during, or after school hours. Without any legal argument, the federal district court in Pensacola, Florida, entered the consent order. The order, the claim is, unconstitutionally infringes on the rights of teachers, administrators, and students. Now, a group called Liberty Council has filed a motion to intervene on behalf of Christian Educators Association International to challenge what they describe as an overreaching order. Meanwhile, the ACLU began to go against individual employees. The ACLU complained to the court that Mr. Freeman and Mr. Lay, the aforementioned principal and athletic director, offered a prayer to bless the meal served to consenting adults at the appreciation luncheon. Based on the ACLU's allegations, U.S. District Judge Casey Rogers has now initiated criminal contempt proceedings and has referred to Messrs. Lay and Freeman to the United States Attorney's Office for prosecution. The United States of America has accepted the assignment and is prosecuting Mr. Lay and Mr. Freeman criminally for the mealtime prayer. They prayed over the food, Pastor.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they were proselytizing or evangelizing or street corner preaching. They prayed before they ate, and it is now alleged to be a criminal infraction. What's on your mind?
You were talking about the church and state clashing.
Yeah.
It's just a good example of it. I think it's probably cohabitation without marriage that causes the problem on that one. But the Constitution is pretty clear that we have the right. Well, the right that we have is that the government shall not... I don't even remember how the words go now. It's just, that's irritating. But they're not allowed to make a law that establishes a religion. And now, I would say that would include saying you can't have a religion, which is sort of annoying. I don't think they have the right to do that. I think we're going to find that out if the courts take that up. But there's another issue there, too. If there is an established government order that says you can't do what you're supposed to do as a Christian person, you're still going to have to do it. You know, you can go read about Daniel and how he had fun in the lion's den if you want to know how that goes. All the outcomes are not like that, though. But if you're going to be civilly disobedient, you sort of need to be prepared for the consequences. Whether these guys are or not, I don't know. But that's what happened.
But hold on a second.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quarreling with you. I'm just really trying to understand this because, you know, when I check my bearings, they're not lining up with this story. I can see where if a teacher was in a classroom and was teaching children
mm-hmm.
Christianity, that's wrong. That is...
No, it's not.
It is if it's a public school.
Well, it's not allowed, but it's not wrong.
Well, it's wrong because it's not allowed.
Yeah, okay.
Let's we'll say it that way.
Yeah.
But when people gather under their own association, which happens to have an affiliation with the public school district, and pray over their food, now we clearly have gone too far to criminalize that. We're not just talking about a slap on the wrist here. We're talking about criminalizing that.
Yeah, well, that's the contempt of court thing. You know, whatever the order is, if they don't obey it, they're going to come under that order. I don't know whether they obey the order according to the way it was written or not. I mean, that's a legal matter. Obviously, in this country, I agree with you. That's way too far, way too far. It's the fact that it shouldn't even be up for discussion. And 50 years ago, it wouldn't have been.
You know, sometimes we get these kinds of stories.
Yeah.
And somebody does something, and we say to ourselves as Christian people, well, that's unfortunate. You know, I'm sad to see that we've gone that far.
Yeah.
But you can sort of understand the thinking of the opponent. You can at least understand the thinking of the opponent.
I really don't.
But this has gone to the point of just being patently ridiculous in my mind. These people apparently are insisting that we have a secular society in every way, and that religion cannot exist except maybe within the four walls of your church there, and maybe not for long.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that clearly goes against the statements of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the people that wrote those things. But there are people in power that have that as an agenda item, and when you have power, you can make that stuff happen.
I mean, can you imagine yourself, you probably, I'm thinking, in your ministry, have been to some luncheons along the way. They probably all weren't in the church building or the church basement, and somebody has probably somewhere along the way said, Pastor Moore, would you pray before we eat? And you've probably said, I'd be happy to do that.
Right.
In all kinds of settings, am I right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe now you can be, maybe now you're a criminal if you're not careful where you do that. Can you see yourself, Pastor, saying, well, there are some people here who are teachers, and there is a connection to the public school system, so I'm afraid I won't be able to pray over the meal. Can you envision yourself saying that?
No. Never.
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 Well, you're flirting with criminality.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. I might make a public issue of that and see if I can't get some people to be very upset about it in the political realms and maybe do something about it.
This might reflect poorly on the congregation at Popka, Florida there.
I don't think so.
Not worried about that?
No.
Your family might, be distracted from your family responsibilities. Better to roll over.
No.
Nope, not going to do it?
No. I'm way too stubborn. I haven't been there, but I think I can say that with some confidence.
Well,
I'm not going
to
do that.
Here's the third thing that you need to think about.
Yeah.
It seems to me, because if we go back to the second paragraph of the story, this happened last year when the ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Santa Rosa County School District, claiming that some of the teachers and administration endorsed religion. And that was the claim. Then it goes on to say, rather than fight that claim, the school district consented to the entry of an order that prohibited and then blah, blah, blah.
Right, so, they consented because that's okay with them.
Well, maybe they consented because they don't have the resources to hire the lawyers that it takes to fight the ACLU in a protracted 10-year struggle about praying over your food.
And isn't that's basically good men who remain silent, is it not?
Well, you know, I would think that, I'm guessing, now that we know that you're a pretty stubborn guy, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing that on the day that you decide, I'm praying over this food whether they like it or not, and the next thing you know, the police are at your door with some kind of contempt order and, you know, notice to appear.
Yeah.
You know what? You're going to need an attorney.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, money that was going to go for Christmas or for a new automobile or vacation is going to the attorneys.
Yeah, but there really isn't any choice. There isn't any choice. It's obey God rather than men. Now, you know, you obey the law in as much as it is permitted by what God has said, but you just can't set it aside that, you know, if God says this is what you do, then you do it. And if it gets you in trouble, then I guess it gets you in trouble, because there are things beyond this life that matter more. And that's just something that you have to do. I would say with some confidence that Christians have been on that side of things far more than on the near side, where they've been supported by government throughout the centuries. Even now, I'd say that's probably true in this century. And we are blessed in a country where it isn't as much of a problem. It is increasingly a problem, and we have a choice to make. We can either stand up and make it go right, or we can do what we're supposed to do and suffer the consequences. But either way, you're going to end up in the same place. You still are going to face God.
You got something in the water down there in Florida? You got all these stories coming out of the Sunshine State down there?
I think I remember Santa Rosa is up there right next to Pensacola. It's not Pensacola. That's a different county. But
yeah.
And I used to live up there. And it's a little surprising that you'd hear stuff in there. But I don't know what's in the water. But, you know, this state is pretty conservative for the most part.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you get near the big cities, it isn't necessarily so. And on top of that, anytime you talk about federal court, you're in trouble pretty much everywhere these days.
You sound pretty much like a here I stand, I cannot do otherwise kind of guy.
Well, I'm thinking at this moment that might be just a little bit arrogant of me to think that I could always do that. But I know that I must. Whether I can or not is another matter, I suppose. But I know that I must, and I pray that I will.
If they send you to jail for praying before the meal there, praying over the food there, Pastor, you let me know, and we'll get the Bible study audience together. We'll make your bail.
Yeah. Well, and there are a lot of people that are friends of Christians that may do more yet than
yeah.
that, but that's true. And I'd call you in a heartbeat.
Now, the last time we talked to you, you said I asked hard questions. Were these hard questions, Pastor?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
Hard, huh?
They're always hard.
You don't seem to struggle all that much with them. You seem to be pretty ready.
Well, it's one thing I've learned through the years is to be a good tap dancer.
Well, we don't mind asking you the hard questions, because after the program is done, you're still living in Florida.
That's true.
Which is a pretty good thing, I think.
Yeah.
God's blessings to you, sir.
And you.
That's Pastor Don Moore. He took the hard questions today here on our Ask the Pastor program. Tomorrow we'll be in Luke chapter 6, verses 20 through 26 with Pastor John Schmidtke, and our good friend from Concordia Seminary will be here in studio, Dr. Victor Raj, for Ask the Professor. Join us then.
Listen to Chuck Rather and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.